Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Aaron. Very kind. And I'm sorry to have missed most of the first two speakers. I really am. I'm sorry not to be able to stay for the day, because I always think the debates are very important, and it's important that colleagues in government listen, not just speak. I say that, and then I've got to go at the end. I'm really sorry. Although, of course, I'll stay for questions. Let me just start by saying that there are many parts of the debate about which I think universities UK in particular, higher education, further education, representatives in the English language sector, students themselves have shaped and influenced the way in which we enact government policy. So I want to be clear from the off that we are very interested in listening to the views of others before we implement government policy. And I hope that I work in a Home Office and in an agency that doesn't always believe we know best. And ministers will set policy, and we will help implement that policy, but we will do that in concert with educators, with those educated, with businesses and others. So I just want to be clear about that from the start. Let me just say a few things by way of context. A little over a year ago now, Theresa May announced the government's package of reforms to the student immigration system following a wide-ranging public consultation with probably more responses than we'd seen in many a year. And over the last year, we've been implementing a majority of the changes, and they'll be fully implemented by December this year. And by that point, educators need to have acquired, sponsors need to have acquired education oversight. I guess the government is committed to particularly two issues. One of them Joe was talking about just before, which is reducing net migration to sustainable levels over the course of the parliament, and the student route has to play a part in achieving that aim. I'll come on to the issue of counting in a minute. And the second key objective was to reduce immigration abuse. The student route has been of particular concern to us, as most of you will know. At the same time as those two objectives, it's clear that we've got to continue to welcome the very best and the very brightest students, as well as workers and investors and entrepreneurs, those that will benefit the United Kingdom both economically and culturally. And I, again, absolutely understand the issues of richness and diversity in campuses, workplaces, in communities around the United Kingdom, that gained and enhanced by having people who don't all think the same way sitting in the same seminars debating issues. The changes we've made to the immigration system, including to the student route over the last year, I'm absolutely clear will not prevent individuals from coming to the UK. It is important we strike the right balance, and there are four levers of change that we are putting in place. I briefly mentioned the abuse of student route was a particular concern. We saw economic migrants using the student route as a way of coming into the UK to work, and people coming here to study who'd actually not studied for many, many, many years. This is not a particular issue relating to students. We'd seen the same in relation to asylum in the past, where asylum seekers had claimed asylum but actually probably had wished to be here for economic purposes. And when a previous government ended the permission to work in the asylum system, because you could previously come and claim asylum and work, when we ended that, there was one of the levers that meant that asylum intake went down very significantly. The aim of the policy reforms is to bear down on that sort of abuse and raise the quality of students and raise the quality of education providers using the route. And that's why we've introduced a targeted package of policy reforms. And just to be clear, because you could read The Guardian, you could read The Independent, you could read The Express, you could read The Times, and believe that somewhere along the line we have placed a limit on students coming to United Kingdom. There is not a limit on numbers. You're probably all familiar with these by now, but let me just summarise the four levers. The first is stricter accreditation and sponsor criteria. To recruit international students, all sponsors were required to apply for education oversight and highly trusted sponsor status. In the past, there had been very little regulation of the private sector, which had allowed some poor quality providers to flourish on the back of international student recruitment. Some providers, I believe, had not taken their student recruitment and compliance obligations seriously enough, and that's why we now have in place basic standards that everyone needs to meet if they wish to recruit international students under Tier 4. The second lever is more robust entry requirements, including raising the bar on English language levels. Though there are exceptions for exceptional people, and there are exceptions, for example, for universities in the way we apply that bar. Thirdly, limiting entitlements to work and to sponsor dependents, emphasising a simple adage, which is if you're coming to study, come to study. The fourth is making the break between temporary and permanent stay in the UK. Joe's very neat encapsulation, people come here, study and go, is sadly not quite an accurate reflection of the realities. And when you look at the number of students that have come here, studied and then made application to settle in the UK, you'd be surprised at the size of the number. And certainly the Home Secretary and the Immigration Minister were very concerned about it. And the Home Secretary has been absolutely clear that she wishes to break the link between temporary admission to the UK and a permanent stay. And students, amongst others, had quite a strong preponderance to not study, come, study and go, but come, study, 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 form relationships, want to stay, apply for settlement. And the Home Secretary is quite clear she wishes to break that link. And we're limiting leave, we're ensuring genuine progression within academic courses takes place. And we've closed the Tier 1 post-study route. What are the potential impacts of those things? In terms of the changes, the early indications are encouraging that in terms of numbers and quality of applicants, we're seeing refused in the system. So we're not pleased to see refusals. We want to see refusals going down, but the quality of students going up. Around 170 institutions have chosen not to apply for education oversight, and 250 or so have chosen not to become highly trusted sponsors. All sponsors must maintain a high level of compliance, and we've refused the applications of a number of those who've applied for or have had to renew their highly trusted status. We have got a smaller, more compliant register made up of quality providers. Figures from UCAS indicate, by the way, a 13% rise in applications to UK universities for admission in 2012 from students outside the EU. So any doubts you've got about the United Kingdom's excellent education institutions being open for business is somewhat negated by that fact. Universities and tertiary colleges have increased their percentage of share of our confirmation of acceptance of studies assigned from 53% in 2010-11 to 66% in 2011-12. So just to repeat, higher education and tertiary colleges have taken a greater share of the confirmations of acceptance of studies we assign from 53% to 66. So they're now accounting for nearly half all the CASs issued for students so far in 2012. And recent English UK research, and I know you're hearing from Tony later today, research indicates that the reforms are having an impact on the English language sector, significantly reducing the number of non-accredited English language schools and encouraging those who want to stay in the market to achieve some form of accreditation. Last couple of things on impacts. All this seems to me to suggest that the reforms are working and that the impact is falling on the higher risk elements of the sector, which is very much what the government wanted to target. We will continue to monitor the route very closely for any evidence of continuing abuse, and we will take action if necessary. Let me say a few words about students or migrants, which is a debate that Universities UK, many others are having, and I know we were tested on at the Public Accounts Committee a couple of weeks ago. There's an ongoing debate around whether students should even be counted as migrants for the purposes of migration statistics. And I know that there are a number of groups, including universities and the higher education sector, who believe we should look at other methods of assessing HE student numbers. To be clear, it's the Independent Office for National Statistics that determines how net migration statistics are collected and produced. It's not UKBA, it's not the agency, nor is it the Home Office, nor is it the government. The net migration statistics are produced in line with internationally agreed definition of long-term migrants, and that is someone coming into the country or leaving the country for over a year. You've got to have been here for a year and go if you're counted out, and you've got to have come here and stayed for over a year to come in. And I personally believe that to the person on the Clapham omnibus, that is a pretty easy definition to understand. Those on student visit visas, by the way, are already exempt because they only stay for a maximum of 11 months. And we don't categorise students as coming for over a year as being seen as temporary. In the same way as other migrants, students have impacts on communities, they have impacts on public services, and they have impacts on infrastructure. Many of those impacts are great contributions, some of them are not. And you've got to see that from the government's position, those impacts have to be measured. I can't be clear enough about this. And I know Joe again mentioned Lord Henley and his statement when asked about this in the Lords. I am very clear that there'd have to be a very careful consideration about why would the government want to move away from a method of counting that is internationally agreed, accepting that some countries have chosen not to use it. Let me move on to the question of can the UK maintain our position of excellence in terms of education. The question being posed today is, can we do that? And of course, it's largely determined not by UKBA, not by the Home Office, but it's by all of you. It's by the sector, whether you can remain competitive in the face of global competition. What I can say is that our system and policies are highly supportive of world-leading institutions, our universities, our independent schools. We don't have a limit, I restate, on international student numbers. We genuinely welcome genuine international students to the UK, and there is absolutely no reason for genuine students to be deterred by an immigration control system. In fact, stricter regulation should ensure that genuine international students receive the quality of education they expect when they come to the UK, so you don't meet students who feel duped from having looked at a website, seen beautiful green fields and a marvellous building, and then find themselves in an urban conurbation with five desks, three chairs, and one person meant to be teaching them, which we have seen, which we've been very depressed about, which we should all be concerned about, and where institutions have closed at short notice because they can no longer attract the financial model that assists them. Let me say something about the brightest and the best, if I may. In addition to tightening the system in some areas, we've also introduced some new routes for the brightest and the best. So the graduate entrepreneur route is an example which allows those with entrepreneurial ideas to stay on after their studies to develop those. Last year, we also introduced the exceptional talent route for world leaders in the fields of the arts, the sciences, and we encouraged more investors and entrepreneurs as well. And we've asked erudite expert bodies to recommend people for those routes rather than us do that. to ensure that the UK retains the brightest and the best graduates, and we have made specific provision for those who are in the UK under post-study work category to remain beyond their 2 years. They will not be subject to the Tier 2 limit. And we've also made it easier to switch into the Tier 2 general category, which is the main work category for people outside the EU, by waiving the resident labour market test. If you are a graduate and you can get an employer in the United Kingdom to employ you, as they have to be licensed sponsors, they will sponsor you and employ you. As a graduate, you can go and do that job. There are some financial conditions associated with it. There are some limits on the amount of salary we expect people to be paid, lower limits. But the other issue is that they're not subject to the resident labour market test, which for any other employee they are outside the EU. We've also introduced transitional arrangements to make it easier for post-study workers working in their own business to switch into the Tier 1 entrepreneur route. And I think what we've developed is a more sustainable, a more selective system, if you like. But I want to be clear one last time that the UK remains very much open for business for both students and workers. I'll just end by giving you a few minutes on what's on the horizon. I guess the key message is we very much appreciate that over the last year or 18 months, there's been an enormous amount of change for the education sector as our reforms have been implemented by you and by us. By December, we'll have completed those. You've told us it would be helpful to have a period of stability as these changes bed in. We don't anticipate reforms on the scale we've just undertaken in the near future, but we do need to keep a close eye on how the student system is working and on any further remaining abuse. But there are one or two areas we're going to look at over time in conjunction with colleagues dealing with policy in the Home Office. Firstly, the student visit visa routes, including the extended route for English language students. Over the coming year, we're going to just look at those routes, see how well they're operating, see if there is any abuse, and how well those routes serve low-risk applicants. Secondly, we're looking at the use of interviewing students. We've undertaken a pilot in 40 and a few more high-risk countries to see what the effect of extending the use of interviews in our posts abroad would have. We're currently reviewing the findings with our colleagues in Home Office policy, but the early results indicate that there is some abuse that can be tackled by targeting interviewing under our existing rules, particularly we've noticed in some countries when interviewing people, their ability to speak English just does not match up to the expectation around the English tests that are meant to be ascribed. There's also the possibility, which ministers are considering at the moment, of asking the Migration Advisory Committee to look at the economic value of international students to UK residents, disaggregated perhaps by both course and institution type. I think that would be quite helpful to the evidence base and the discussion. And coming soon after the Olympics, we're going to be introducing our online application process for students applying in the UK. So in August, we're going to, probably in July, we will introduce some tests out of country, and we'll introduce in-country extensions for specific sponsors. We're going to roll this out carefully and slowly so that students can make an application online, they can send required documents to us to a document scanning centre, pay online and get their decision very quickly. It'd be nice if we could get the decision responded to through email as well. We're certainly thinking about that. We're going to roll that out in July, August, September in the North East, Yorkshire and the Humber and our North West regions, encouraging those students in those mainly universities to use that system. And if it works smoothly and well, we'll roll it out nationally. We've undertaken extensive testing of it as a system and will continue to do so before we open it up to all our customers. We're taking that phased approach to make sure that it does as well as the sponsor management system did, which everybody was very sceptical about when we first introduced it, but it actually worked well and has continued to work well in the three and a bit years since we launched it. We've already spoken to sector representatives about our whole approach, but we're going to write later this month, setting out our plans in more detail. And depending on system performance, I hope we'll see it really running smoothly by the autumn. Last couple of things that I wanted to say so that I finish dead on time. I want to say something about busy summer and Olympic planning. And the reason that I was a little late coming, the reason I need to go is because of all the issues to do with the Olympics and planning for them, as well as the fact that we need to move some of our staff to support the border during this quite complicated time. We aim to process 75% of all our in-country student applications within 20 days, and we're not currently achieving this. I want to be clear about that. To give you an indication, the current processing times are that we are dealing with cases that came to us in mid-March for biometric processing. I'm unhappy about that. Colleagues in Sheffield are unhappy about that. We are running a little more slowly than I would like. Part of the reason is because we are having to divert staff to other key tasks. It's not an excuse, it's just a context. We've already sent additional staff to our posts overseas around the world to help with an increase in visa demand over the summer. We've put 32 additional visa officers in India and 150 extra staff into China. Tier 4 applicants can apply 3 months in advance of their course date start, and encouraging people to do so early, not too early, up to 3 months in advance, is something I would strongly commend. All the details of our visa processing times for overseas posts are available on our website, and applicants can apply for student visit visas 6 months in advance of their planned travel date. If you're involved in that world, encourage people to plan in advance during this inevitably busy time. Last thing I'll say is just a brief word about the border. My colleagues in UK Border Force are fully prepared to cope with the busy periods during the Olympic period. They will ensure that all immigration desks at Heathrow and key ports and airports in the southeast are staffed wherever necessary during our peak periods. Planning has started nearly 2 years ago for the period of the Olympics and the Paralympics. We've been reviewing the plans at the highest level of government, and I am confident that we will have a smooth exit from the UK when the Games are finished, and I know we will have a smooth entry for people who are wanting to come to them. Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.